Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. So everyone is at home. Kids are there. You're trying to do some remedial work. The teachers from the public school are either doing e-learning or they're sending your kids emails with the stuff that they need to be working on. And this may be the first time you've actually taken a good long look at what your child is being taught. You might be surprised that maybe even a simple math problem, word problem might have a kid with same-sex parents. Wow, I didn't know they were teaching my kid this in math. And other examples, how history is being taught to your children, that there are oppressors and the oppressed, and that's how history is to be understood. You never know, but maybe this is the time to not only notice, but do something about it. We're going to be talking about equity programs, e-learning, and public schools. Beth Feely joins us. She's a freelance writer and editor, author of a column for The Federalist titled, "The Schoolwork My Kids Are Bringing Home Exposes Public Schools' Radical Leftist Politics." Beth, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Beth, why are parents often ignorant of their children's public school curricula?
Well, I think a lot of times parents are just unplugged and they assume that if they live in a quote-unquote good school system, that all is well. I think a lot are not terribly perhaps aware of just kind of how our educational system really has been leaning left for a while. And I also think it takes a lot of time and work. And I know I could even be doing a better job than I'm doing. So, you know, you have to sit down and talk with your kids, take a look at their work, talk with them, ask them questions about what's happening in class. And that also, you know, you have to do that because you are not in the classroom. So you don't hear how things are characterized. You don't know how they're talking about various issues. So, you know, I think it is a level of effort. Some parents do it and many do not.
How is long-term e-learning going to change that?
Well, for one thing, parents right now have the opportunity to sit next to their kids if they happen to be in a school district where the teacher may be doing an online course and providing some instruction. I think also, as the assignments are going to be sent home, via email or however the school is doing that, parents will be a little bit better able to kind of stay on top and really take a look at what lessons their kids are being taught. And it also is a really great opportunity for parents, again, to sit down with their kids and ask some questions about what they're doing. I think everybody's busy. It's very easy to send your kids off to school and forget to check in with them or take a look at what that history assignment is about. And so hopefully this might maybe just, you know, change a little bit of those habits and hopefully just provide for more interaction and just awareness that it really is important to be just looking at exactly the materials that your children are being taught about every day. I think also that there are just more options, and I'm hoping that this just broaden some thinking, you know, that beyond the traditional classroom, that e-learning, you know, learning does not have to take place there, as I mentioned in my article, and that perhaps there are some combinations. Perhaps there will just be a little bit more open-mindedness towards the possibilities that e-learning can provide from a kind of a traditional mode of delivering education.
So what kind of left-wing theories should parents expect to see in their children's schoolwork?
Well, it's going to vary. And it also varies by school district. I'm not sure you're probably seeing this in some school districts as much as you might in larger urban school districts. But I know that from my perspective and my experience, I have definitely noticed in the areas where climate change is being taught, LGBTQ issues, and oftentimes it's in the English and history classes where you're going to run into that. Then we also get into some of these equity issues and critical race theory thinking. And it really, you know, whenever you're seeing in a class where they're going to be taking a social justice lens or something like that towards a topic, And really, a lot of these lenses that have become so popular, I always kind of take a look at what lenses they are looking at or looking at an issue through, because that kind of sets my alarm bells off. And the other thing I've noticed is that during Black History Month, my children have gotten materials that are far more from a left-wing perspective. And so what I have done is I have, you know, for example, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who is rather dark and very grievance-focused and is a proponent for issues like reparations. What I've done is I've suggested other curriculum, and that, you know, just say, if you're going to be teaching this, then why, how about this author? For example, a Jason Hill or a Glenn Lowry or a Bob Woodson, but somebody who would also be appropriate, but perhaps round out what a child is being taught.
So you mentioned it a moment ago, what is the concept of equity and how is it being pushed in school curricula?
So the concept of equity, I've heard it defined several different ways, but I think the easiest way to explain it is to put out this scenario, especially as it relates to schools. And so what I would say is, for a kid to be successful, is it better to teach them that they are capable and to hold them to high standards? Or is it better to tell them that they're a victim and that they need special treatment in order to succeed? And an equity program would teach the latter. It is often brought into a school to close performance gaps, especially across racial groups. This idea has been around a while, really emanating from academia as far back as I can tell, kind of from the 80s and 90s, but really accelerated in the last several years. But the idea is that in order for change to happen, in order to close these gaps, we need to change the rules. We need to redistribute the resources, and we have to do that because certain groups are oppressors, certain groups are being oppressed because of institutional racism, and this is the only way that we're going to close those gaps. And I would argue that that is not how you're going to effectively close those gaps. I think that one consultant had defined it that it's about fairness and procedures, processes, and the distribution of resources, and that it requires changing structures of power and privilege. And I thought that that was really interesting because I think that's a lot more about equality of outcome than it is about equality of opportunity. And so equity, it really rejects a merit-based way of looking at achievement and achieving those goals of closing those gaps. And even in one presentation I saw, it was directed at teachers who would then implement this type of thinking in classrooms. But it taught them that meritocracy is a myth. And I just thought, gosh, that's sad. I mean, that's really what our country is built on. And so that's what it's kind of about, and that is the type of thinking that's behind it.
How do these equity programs hurt students?
Well, you know, they're premised on victimhood, and they divide kids into groups based on oppression. So the one group are oppressed, the others are oppressors. This is often along racial lines. And I once even saw a picture at a grade school near me. They were doing a Black Lives Matter at school week, and they had a sign, and this is being seen by children as young as kindergarten and first grade, saying, "Are you white? Then you are privileged. Use it for good." And I just thought, wow, that's divisive. And so those are two of the problems. Often with these equity programs, you will see reduced learning standards. So in order to close those gaps, they will basically make it easier to pass. They often get rid of differentiated programs because they don't want kids to be divided into groups of accelerated, average, remedial, or whatever those labels might be. And they also often are accompanied by programs that teach teachers that they are racist and that it is their kind of racism that is to blame for some of these gaps. And the other thing that I've noticed is that the equity programs are often also focused on what are termed restorative justice practices. And it's meant to reduce suspension rates based on race. But what often happens is that it replaces discipline with a license for chaos in the classroom. And so not only do the kids, basically it takes away the teacher's ability to manage the classroom because they want to minimize the number of the suspensions, which, by the way, is a good goal. I think we certainly want to reduce numbers of suspensions. It's kind of what's the path to getting there. In an equity program, it would take away a teacher's ability to discipline, and what ensues is chaos in the classroom. The child misbehaving does not learn how to properly behave. And the other effect is on the other students in the class who are otherwise there to learn. And because all of the time, energy, and resources of the teacher are being used to deal with this one child, not a lot of learning occurs. And it can even be dangerous. And so I think that is a problem. And then I think just the notion that, and it was kind of going back to that picture that I was describing, it often assumes that privilege is along purely racial lines. And I think at its core that's pretty ignorant. I mean, I think you can look at lots of stories where poverty doesn't necessarily know race. I mean, I think that, of course, you've got certain groups where poverty may be more prevalent, but then there are also exceptions to that. And so I think making these large assumptions based on a trait that people have no control over, and often it's not reflective of who that person is. It might be a part of who they are, but it's not the defining quality. You know, it just does not make sense to me that that's something that you want to be creating school programs and policy around.
Do these equity programs do anything to improve student performance?
Not that I have been made aware of. I have actually not seen research that shows that, for example, test scores have improved. I have seen really, I think, more along the lines of the destructive nature of them than anything that is helping. And I think that it does also, I think it harms the school's climate. And that's a little ironic because I think sometimes these programs are premised on trying to create atmospheres that are more welcoming. And I think that, you know, perhaps is well-intentioned. The problem is that I think the way they go about it ends up being very divisive, very focused on grievance. It kind of teaches children on how to be offended and to look for ways to be offended rather than empowering them to achieve and to really become the best person that they can be. So I have not come across anything that gives evidence that it helps. And if anything, it strikes me as a mindset that actually could hurt. And I was thinking about this, that if you think about if somebody would go for therapy, if they would be trying to overcome a problem, you are not going to have a therapist say, you know what, you're a victim, you can't change anything. That is not going to help somebody. If anything, you confront a problem and you do it and you think through it and you think of the potential that you have to overcome it. And I just don't think, I think the thinking behind these programs is not along those lines. I think instead it probably hurts and it keeps people trapped in a mindset of victimhood, which eventually it's a great recipe for failure.
So what should parents do when they find these ideas and these theories in their children's schoolwork?
Well, talk to your kids so that they know that they should come to you if they're seeing this. And then as well, you know, check their schoolwork. I would strongly recommend that people should take these issues to their teachers. I think it's really important that they speak up. They should share information with other parents, share it with the school administration, your school board. When I do so, I always try to be polite. I bring up problems I might have with ideas, not necessarily the people delivering the ideas. I also try to give alternatives. So if I find a lesson where I think, this didn't make sense to me, what were you trying to teach? And then the teacher, you know, will explain it, and it doesn't necessarily make sense to me, but I will say, look, here's an alternative, because I think that will help, you know, the person to see that you are really out there to help the educational process and, you know, not just criticize what they're doing. The bottom line is that I really don't think this is healthy for kids, and I don't think they should be doing it. But I do also feel that it's more helpful to make change in this way if you come with some other alternatives.
Beth Feely is a freelance writer and editor, author of a column for The Federalist titled "The Schoolwork My Kids Are Bringing Home Exposes Public Schools' Radical Leftist Politics." You can read it under the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Beth, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be going through your email and the Issues Etc. listener comment line live this Tuesday afternoon, April 7th, next.
recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ, Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
This is Pastor Donald Jordan welcoming you to Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church in Chico, California. We stand upon the inspired, inerrant Word of God and preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Students at Chico State and Butte College are welcome to our college group. Our divine service is at 10 and Sunday school at 9. We are located at 750 Moss Avenue and our website is redeemerchico.org.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The world around us raises all sorts of reasons why Christ could not have risen from the dead. The April issue of the Lutheran Witness discusses how we can, in fact, know that Christ rose from the dead. Adam Francisco answers resurrection objections. Kirk Clayton explains how the Bible proves Christ's resurrection, and there's so much more. Here, Lutherans have an opportunity. For a world focused on fear of death and COVID-19, we can point them to the resurrected Christ. To learn more about this, visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the world from a Lutheran perspective. cph.org/witness.
Lutheran Talk.
We have an ecumenical responsibility to hold forth the scriptures and to bear witness to grace alone, faith alone, Christ alone.
Lutheran Music. Listen anytime, anywhere in 2020 with the Lutheran Public Radio mobile app. Download for iPhone, Android, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.